Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome back to Tailgate Till May. I'm your host, Stephen Gorgi, and I'm joined for another episode by my co-host and friend, Brian Kaufman. We have a great show for you today as we continue our football preview series with the Pac-12. But first, a reminder, you can subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcast. Apple, Spotify, Google, you name it, you can get it there. And if you like the show, we'd love if you leave us a five-star review. So let's get into it, talking some West Coast football. Brian, how you doing?
I'm doing great, man. I'm ready to talk West Coast, Best Coast, especially before some of these West Coast teams become Midwest or East Coast teams. The Pac-12, as we know it, at least as we have the last couple of years, excited to get into it tonight.
I think maybe two episodes ago, I made some sort of OC reference. I feel like we needed the OC, some OC theme music right now, right?
Yeah, yeah. Royalties are a little too expensive for our budget, but yeah, if we could, maybe we could just sing it, you know, just California. Yeah, there you go.
California, here we come.
Perfect, nailed
That's
it.
Right. Pac-12, here we come. So let's get into our last time on the Pac-12. A few things you should know about the 2021 season and the 2021-2022 offseason. So, number one, the Pac-12 was a two-team league last year. Utah and Oregon were the only two teams to finish the season in the AP Top 25. Well, half the league finished under 500. Not a good year for the Pac-12. Early in the season, Oregon was everyone's darling. They beat Ohio State in the Horseshoe in week two. It seemed like they were going to be a clear CFP contender. In that game, CJ Verdell rushed for 161 yards and really made the Buckeyes defense look bad. And I think sent the state of Ohio into a panic. But in October, Oregon lost to Stanford in one of the season's weirdest and most controversial finishes. Oregon took a bunch of penalties on Stanford's last drive. Eventually, Stanford tied the game as time expired and won in overtime. Oregon rebounded. They won five straight, and they brought a number four ranking into a late November matchup with number 24 Utah, and Utah pounded them. Utah got off to a rough start to begin the season. They were 1-2 with a couple losses to BYU, and then I'm drawing a blank on the other one. Was it San Diego State? Their second loss.
That sounds right.
Yeah, they lost. Let's just put it this way: they lost to some teams that are not in the Pac-12 to start the year. Things were not looking good, but they rebounded, and by the time those two teams met, the Utes pounded Oregon 38-7 in Salt Lake City and then did the same thing 2 weeks later in the Pac-12 championship game with a 38-10 win. And where they mauled them was up front. Oregon was outrushed 399-137 in those two games, and Ducks quarterback Anthony Brown was sacked seven times. So those were the only two good teams in the league last year, and Utah really established himself as the clear-cut top team, just completely outplaying Oregon in those two games. But as good as Utah's finish to the season was, no team in the Pac-12 was as good as BYU, which went 5-0 against the Pac-12, including a win over the aforementioned conference champion Utah. They beat Arizona State. Then they won at Washington State, and they completed the sweep with USC. No team in the Pac-12 was as good as BYU last year, which I think, again, just speaks to kind of how embarrassing the season was for the Pac-12 as a whole. And then the Pac-12 had some pretty big-time coaching changes this offseason. So I would say the top three, you could make an argument it's three of the top four most prestigious jobs in the conference had coaching changes. So at USC, Clay Helton out, and of course Lincoln Riley in. At Oregon, Mario Cristobal left for Miami, and Georgia defensive coordinator Dan Lanning in. And then at Washington, Jimmy Lake out, Kalen DeBoer Fresno State's former head coach in. And then the last thing, you know, something you may have heard of, there's been a little bit of realignment news going on. So UCLA and USC headed to the Big Ten. This will be the last year in the Pac-12. And Pac-12 Media Day was last week, and Commissioner George Kliavkov had some interesting words for the Big 12. He said, quote, "With respect to the Big 12 being open for business, I appreciate that. We haven't decided if we're going shopping there or not yet," end quote. So George Kliavkov coming out firing at the Big 12. That is kind of, that's what went on in 2021 and the offseason. Any realignment thoughts before we kind of get into the football?
Yeah, I mean, it's not unexpected. It's still weird, I guess I would say, right? Like that, I guess you could say about this like super conference direction that we're heading as a whole. Like I don't think we're done. More stuff's going to come out. And I mean, I say it's not surprising. It feels weird to look at USC and UCLA as Big Ten schools. They're not. But, you know, I like the kind of not so cordial jabs. You know, it does keep it interesting. But yeah, I'm excited for the last year of this conference, kind of as we've known it, because who knows what it's going to look like down the road? We don't. And so kind of one last ride for what we've known.
Yeah, I'm sick of hearing about it and talking about it personally. It seems like everybody else can't get enough of it. And maybe that's just the fact that...
You know, I agree with you. I read, maybe it was Andy Staples' mailbag or something, and it was like, you know, I asked if you wanted realignment questions or to talk about football, and overwhelmingly, you just said, give me more realignment. And I'm with you. Like, maybe I'm a simpleton, and I don't act like I understand all the logistics and finances and reasons for these things happening, other than for money, obviously. But like, I don't. And I'm sorry to cut you off, but I think you were going the same direction. Like, I don't need to hear about it. I don't care to hear about it. UCLA is not a Big Ten team, no matter how long they go there. And so I don't know. I'm with you, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I think you summed it up nicely. The reason I wanted to do this is because I like college football, and that starts with the games on the field and the traditions around it and the rivalries and the fan traditions and the pageantry, not because I like college sports administration. That's just me personally. I mean, there's certainly some interesting things about it. I will say this about realignment. I don't think that these two conferences, the Big 12 and the Pac-12, are well-served sniping at each other. Because I think if they are going to do things, I think what is in each of their best interests, like, I think they have the same best interest at heart. So what's going to help the Pac-12, I think will help the Big 12. And that would mainly be ensuring that they both have access to a college football playoff system going forward. So I just don't think, like, I think they're better served working in concert with one another than sniping at each other and doing things to tear down the other one. I think they have more power together than they do apart, personally.
I would agree with you. And I thought that was the direction we were headed down, right? And I didn't deep dive into why, but I know after they had some conversations, it was suddenly like, couldn't figure it out. And so now it's just sort of like, yeah, it seems to make a lot of sense to work together and try to be a part of it. I don't know. Hopefully they figure it out and we keep getting a good product on the field.
Well, either way, that's that. Let's get into the ball. Like we said, that's what we want to talk about. We are so close to the season. Dude, I was having daydreams this past weekend about like what it's going to be like once the season gets underway. So I am excited to actually talk some more ball here. And I did confirm Utah started 1-2. The two losses were BYU and San Diego State. So one Mountain West team, one former Mountain West team. Not ideal for your conference champion to drop those two games. But they did turn it around when Cam Rising came in as took over as quarterback. And, you know, we're going to get into this, but they're a team that I like a lot this season. So let's get into our four downs. And Brian, I will start it off. We talked about already, the Pac-12 was bad last year. How bad were they? In 11 games against the Mountain West, they went 5-6. Will the Pac-12 be able to win this year's unofficial Pac-12 Mountain West Challenge?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I don't think we're at a point where the Pac-12 having a losing record against the Mountain West is like a Sharpie it on the calendar recurring annual type of event. So I do think that the Pac-12 bounces back to have a winning record against the Mountain West. So we have our show sheet here. Is this the complete matchup schedule right here?
That is the complete matchup schedule.
Okay, so we've got eight games, and Stephen has them listed off. Air Force in Colorado, Boise and Oregon State. Is that Colorado State and Washington State, Fresno and Oregon State, Fresno USC, UNLV Cal, and then San Diego State has Arizona and Utah. So if you really dive into it, I mean, I don't think Utah's going to drop that game. I think San Diego State definitely clobbers Arizona, I would imagine. Maybe it's closer than I made it seemed, and I don't need to go game by game as I make my pick live. I think it'll be close again, like it was close last year when the 5-6 and maybe a ball or two here or there bounces their way, because I can't imagine that happening in back-to-back years, though maybe you feel a different way.
I think it's going to be close.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that San Diego State, as much as I like Utah, I do think that game can be close. I think the fact that it is at Utah means it's a win for them. But I think, like, if you want to kind of break it out, I would say that's definitely a Pac-12 win. I think San Diego State's other game against Arizona is almost certainly a Mountain West win. So they open their new stadium week one. Brand new stadium where Qualcomm used to be. I think it's called Snapdragon Field, something along those lines. They open against Arizona, and I don't see any way that's a loss for San Diego State. So Snapdragon Stadium is the name of it. So I feel like there's 1-1 right there, and there's six other ones. I think Fresno could probably split between Oregon State and USC. So call it 2-2. Cal will beat UNLV 3-2 Pac-12. And the other three, I mean, who knows?
Either way,
I guess the bottom line is whether they can win the challenge or not, it still ain't good to be 5-3 against the Mountain West. It's like something you want to figure out. The SEC doesn't go 5-3 against the Sun Belt.
No, it's not good. I mean, your point is well received that the bottom half of the Pac-12 is not performing particularly well, and that those seem to be the teams that are playing in these games. So I think you're right on that. I think to sort of pivot, right? I don't want to go too quickly to second down, but I'm going to jump ahead because I want to talk about the top of the league. Yeah, I mean, you talked last year. Utah and Oregon was sort of a two-horse race, right? The only other team in the preseason this year that's receiving votes to win the league is USC. And we can get into USC a little bit later on because there's some hype and obviously a lot of change and a lot that's up in the air. But I'm curious, outside of those three teams, Utah, Oregon, USC, that are receiving votes in the preseason poll to win the league, is there a team that you think could make some noise and possibly challenge in the conference?
Yeah, I do. And so it's a little bit of a cop-out because they are the number four team in the Pac-12 media poll. Yeah. But I do like UCLA. I like UCLA. And, you know, as I was thinking about this show tonight, if there's one thing that I feel like has probably become clear to our listeners across our first two preview episodes, it's that I like a couple things. I like mobile quarterbacks, and I like continuity and consistency. And UCLA, they have those things in a league that's really tumultuous. I said that, I think it's the top three, but maybe it's three of the top four most prestigious jobs in the conference head coaching turnover. Well, if UCLA is the four, right? Those are USC, UCLA, Oregon and Washington, I think, are the clear head and shoulders top four most prestigious programs. Of those four, UCLA is the only one that didn't have any turnover at the head coaching position. And Chip Kelly seems to be getting things rolling a little bit now, right? They had an 8-win season last year. They're on the right, on the right track. They return for a fifth year, Dorian Thompson-Robinson. He's a mobile quarterback. They have a really good running game with Zach Charbonnet, who had over 1,100 yards rushing last year. So UCLA is the team that I like. And, from a betting perspective, they're plus 1,000. They're 10-1. So I don't think that's the worst pick in the world if you're like, hey, I want a team that has just had a steady, consistent offseason and might be able to leverage that to make some noise. I don't think that's a terrible pick.
Yeah, so we're going to get into USC specifically, but like, do you think that you, like, would you slot them even or ahead of the Trojans as far as like, I mean, I know we sort of agree that Utah's the team in the South maybe, and we can get more into that, but like,
so by the way, just a reminder, there is no, they scrapped the divisions.
Right.
They scrapped the divisions late in the game.
For going to the championship game, right? Yeah, so there you go. So, I mean, do you, obviously with that pick, but I sort of took USC out of the equation for the argument. So if I were to add them back in, and let's say like even betting aside, just like, do you like them as much or more than the Trojans?
It's really, so I think it's really hard to take. I mean, this is largely a gambling based show,
sure,
right? In a
sure.
lot of aspects.
Yeah. So I think
like at plus 150 to win the conference or whatever it is right now, let's say, yeah, plus 150 for USC. I think that's wildly inflated. I think they are perhaps the most talented team in the conference, but you know, how is all that talent going to come together? There's so much change. There's so much turnover. Like, things don't happen overnight. And yeah, like, if this was fantasy football, sure, I'm going to take USC. I mean, what? They have the league's best quarterback and the top two receivers, and all three of them are transfers. I mean, is that fair to say that, like, those are the three? Caleb Williams is the best quarterback. Jordan Addison and Mario Williams are the two best receivers in the conference.
It sounds fair to me. Yeah.
And then Travis Dye at running back, a transfer from Oregon, is at worst one of the top three running backs behind, you know, maybe Charbonnet and, you know, maybe like what's Utah's running back, Thomas. So, yeah, I think it's like there's clearly a ton of talent there. Right. But how quickly can you go? Have we ever seen this work? What is the best example we've seen of taking 15 plus transfers and turning into a conference champion? I don't know if there is one.
I don't know that we have one. Yeah. Yeah. And I think
took a lot last year. Mel Tucker took a lot and it worked out really well for Michigan State.
Yeah. But I would argue that it might look a lot different if one specific one is out of the equation. Right. So like, and he's got a lot of talented guys too, but like, if you don't have Kenneth Walker as part of that transfer class, which of course he gets credit for, but like, that dude was just a monster on his own that, like, I guess Wake didn't see or didn't pay close enough attention to. Now, all the guys you mentioned that USC got, could fit the bill. I mean, you're right. Like, Caleb Williams is the best quarterback in the conference. If you're throwing the best quarterback in the conference out there, you're going to be feeling good about it. So I guess we sort of got into third down, but to more formally ask the question, and maybe I'll tweak it a bit here live, is that if you're a USC fan, like, what is a success? I mean, they're not always reasonable, I guess, but what is a successful first year? Because the trajectory looks good. You know, I was framing the question originally around, remember what I asked about Miami in the ACC preview, which is like, hey, he's recruiting like a national champion and he's got the excitement going on. And to a certain extent, I think both those things are true for USC as well. But for this year, year one, and it's a little bit different with all these transfers, like, if you're a USC fan, what is success?
Yeah. So I think that, you know, for them, the schedule isn't super hard, which is the good news. They start off with Rice. They go to Stanford, which traditionally they've had a lot of trouble with, but I don't think is that hard of a game, to be quite frank. Okay, and then they have a Fresno State at home, which Fresno State, Jay Kaner, you know, a quarterback is, I mean, that could be a challenge, but it's a home game against a Mountain West team, so should win it. I think they will... I wouldn't be shocked at all if they struggle more than you think to start the season, but if they can make it through, you know, let's call it the first 3 to 5 weeks and start to get things going, like, I think they can have a really good season. But I think a good season for them and a realistic expectation is 9 wins and be in contention for the Pac-12 championship, you know, up until the last week or so. I think it's wildly unrealistic to say in your first year as head coach, go take 20 transfers, win the Pac-12, and go to the college football playoff. And I feel like based on a lot of the preview conversations, preview magazines, the gambling markets right now, that's essentially what people are saying, is you need to go win the Pac-12 this year, and better yet, really go to the college football playoff. And I don't think that it's realistic, or like, it could happen. Yes, it could happen, right? It could be a perfect combination. But like, let's talk about the fact that their defense still, I don't think, is going to be very good. Last year it was terrible, and I think it's still a major question mark. I mean, they were 94th in the country in yards per carry, and I feel like the run game isn't something we've talked about a lot, and I feel like we're going to talk a little bit more about it tonight in the Pac-12, because there are some good running games. But if you can't stop the run like that, you're not going anywhere. And then they didn't rush the passer either. They were 91st in sacks per game. So I don't know. I don't like their defense. I think they eventually will put up a lot of points. But again, this just, it isn't fantasy football. Like, they're going to lose a game you don't expect them, that you think like, wow, that was weird. And I mean, if you look at the, we talked about it, I think it was last week, if you look at first year coaches and what it takes, a lot of the really successful coaches that we see right now and think of as uber successful, it takes a little bit of time. And I don't think Lincoln Riley is any different.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. I like what you said about fantasy football, because it does feel like that. Like, it feels like, now I'm going to be really testing my old NBA knowledge here, but like, there was that year where the Lakers added Gary Payton and Karl Malone, and like, everybody was like, it's over, and they didn't win, and it just like didn't work as well as you expected it to. And it sort of reminds me of that, where it's just like, oh, I know who Caleb Williams is. Oh, he's USC's quarterback now. Okay, great. Yeah, I saw Mario Williams, right? I watched Travis Dye for like what feels like 7 seasons at Oregon, just tearing people up. I would agree with you that I think people are maybe underestimating a bit the what it takes to put these pieces together. And there's a reason that experience matters. And we talk about, when we're talking about teams that we think might do well in these conferences, there's a reason we cite returning starters, right? Like, it's people who have played together. It's not, you know, a foolproof thing, but of course experience matters. So you're talking about these guys who are all playing on a team together for the first time. I think they added 10 defensive players alone in the portal that, like, they're just gonna, hey, I hope this works. And you're right, like, maybe it will, but you're not going to bet on them being the first team to figure this out on such short notice. I agree with you. I think that they can be, we'll be talking about them, but I like what you say about dropping a game that you don't expect them to. And I would particularly say that could happen relatively early on. You mentioned like Fresno being able to split their Pac-12 games. Like, I could see that being the one in the third game of the season for USC, where like, all right, yeah, they did win at Stanford, and we thought it might be a trip up game, and then they come out and drop that one to Fresno. So I could definitely see that happening. And I'm with you. I think 8-9 wins is solid in the conversation, is solid, not Pac-12 title contenders this year. It's not realistic.
Yeah. And like, that's fine. Right. I mean, they could easily go, you know, let's keep this in mind. Caleb Williams is a sophomore.
Right.
He's a sophomore.
Right. Yeah.
He's going to be back next year. Like, they could go, if they go 9-3 this year, they will be preseason top five.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you got to imagine, they'll bring in a ton of talent in this year. And then, I think the best way to use the portal, and I don't know that anybody would dispute this, is you got to pick your spots and, you know, fill needs strategically. And I get that Riley is trying to fill a talent void right now, but it's going to be an interesting experiment. We'll see how it works out. I mean, I guess I never really answered your question, like, if I prefer UCLA to USC. And I think that's a really hard thing to say, to like, me to put my money, you know, me to put that on the line right now and say like, yes, I definitely like UCLA. I think they're going to finish ahead of them in the standings. I think they're going to beat them. What I can tell you is, if the choice is 10-1 on UCLA to win the Pac-12, or 1.5-1 on USC, I'm taking UCLA every day of the week. There's no value right now on USC.
Right. Yep. I'm with you. And I'll formally reveal my agreement when we get to best bets later on. But I like your pick a lot. I like your pick a lot.
All right. Fourth down. Let's move down the conference a little bit where there's a little more question mark. So we kind of already agree. Caleb Williams is going to be a huge impact this year. He's going to be one of the best players in the country in competition for best quarterback in the conference. But there are a lot of other starting quarterbacks, transfer quarterbacks who will be starting in the league. You have Emory Jones coming to Arizona State from Florida, Bo Nix coming to Oregon from Auburn, Cam Ward, everybody's favorite Washington State's quarterback coming from Incarnate Word, Michael Penix now at UW from Indiana, and Jaden DeLora, intra-conference transfer at Arizona from Washington State. I never inter, intra, I don't know, something I should know.
Inter.
Inter?
Yeah. Ooh, man.
Stuff.
Yeah. Intra. Intra. I was wrong.
Intra. I think I had it right the first time.
Nailed it.
I'll just edit all this out because it was right the first time. Intra conference transfer, Jaden DeLora now at Arizona. So Brian, aside from Caleb Williams, which of these transfer quarterbacks do you think will have the biggest impact on his new team?
All right. So I'm going to throw a blind resume at you as part of this, okay? And it's been going around the web right now, so maybe you've seen it, but play along with me, even if you have. These are two quarterbacks that were in the same conference last year, okay? I think you know where I'm going with it, but I'm going to do it.
I don't. All right. I'm very excited.
Okay, so this is conference games, statistics in conference games, and I'll try not to let it drag on because it's a visual thing. QB1, 65% completion, about 176 yards per game, 13 touchdowns to 8 picks. QB2, 67%, 2 percentage points higher, completion percentage, 209 yards per game, so 30 or whatever, a little bit more. 10 touchdowns, so a few less touchdowns, 6 INTs, a few fewer INTs. QB1 added 250 rush yards and 5 touchdowns. QB2 rushed for more yards at 433, a couple fewer touchdowns with 2. So those are two resumes that, like, I would call neither one great, but I would call them comparable at least, right? And so QB1 is Will Levis, Kentucky's quarterback who's being talked about as a top 10 pick in early mock drafts. I'm sure that's, you know, that's more tools driven than numbers driven, especially given what I just read you. And quarterback 2 is Emory Jones from Florida. And so this is in conference games, in SEC games last year when they were both in the conference. So I would argue, right, again, the stat lines I read you, not anything that blew your socks off. Maybe it's more of an argument that we should slow the Levis hype argument than a positive statement about Jones. But I think what it actually is to say is that the guy made mistakes. Sure, he didn't live up to hype at Florida. There was a lot of hype. But I think he can play. And I think he was a good pickup for Arizona State. I don't think, like, I'm not here to argue that they're going to be competitive as far as the conference championship race, but I think he'll have them competitive in games. I think he'll have them fun to watch. And so my answer to this question is Emory Jones. I think it was an interesting pickup, and I'm interested to see what he can do there.
Now, I feel like going into last year, he was kind of everybody's breakout guy.
He was supposed to be the guy.
Do you think there's anything to the notion that Dan Mullen is actually a really good offensive coach and he's going to get a downgrade in coaching going to Arizona State?
I would agree with the notion that Dan Mullen's a very good offensive coach. That's interesting. Yeah. I don't know. I think he did. He got opportunities. I just think sometimes it's one of those things where, like, a change of scenery can help a guy like that, where it just, like, for whatever reason, it wasn't working. And so I think, an opportunity to get back on track.
Where do you stand on Cam Ward? This is the guy that everybody is all over right now. Like, at certain times, he was the number one you know, not when Caleb Williams was in the portal, but there were certain points where he was like, this is the guy in the transfer portal, coming from Incarnate Word. They're kind of trying to do the Washington State's kind of trying to do the whole, Bailey Zappe, Zach Kittley thing where they import the quarterback and OC from Houston Baptist to Western Kentucky. And, Washington State's doing it with Eric Morris and Cam Ward, both coming from, Incarnate Word. I mean, I'm not going to pretend like I ever saw Incarnate Word play, but can this guy, is it too big of a step up, or can this guy really make a difference for Washington State?
It does scare me. I mean, I don't act like I know how to scout quarterbacks, but that is like you said, like who did Incarnate Word be? I know he was throwing for 5,000 yards and 50 touchdowns or whatever it was. He wasn't facing Pac-12 athletes chasing him all over the field. Now I think he could come in and have an impact. But I'm scared to bank on it. Like, I think it's really exciting, and he's in an offense that he knows, he's familiar with, which is good. Like, we talk about experience in systems and the value there. So he's like almost removing one barrier to entry of success, which is like he's not going to learn a whole new thing, presumably. There will be aspects, I'm sure. So I think he's set up for success, but it's a lot like with USC, like we were talking about before. It'll happen, and it has happened, but I just have difficulty like predicting that type of level of success. What do you think about him?
I think that it's harder to go from the FCS to the Pac-12 than it is from FCS to the Conference USA. And sure, I think there's going to be he looks to be super impressive, like the stats, the highlights, everything. But I do think there's a bigger learning curve going from FCS to conference to the Pac-12 than a G5 school. So I'm tempering my expectations. I do think I don't need to say everything you just said, because I agree that it's good to have the continuity. You know, I like continuity. So it's good to have the continuity with the OC, but I'm not going to like go and say he's the one of the top three quarter. Like, let's put it this way. I'm not taking him over Caleb Williams. I'm not taking him over DTR. I'm not taking him over, like, I don't know. Would you take him over Emory Jones?
I mean, I guess in theory I already said no, but if it works, it could work better than, like, I don't think Emory Jones is all of a sudden gonna blow the world on fire. It's more of like a hedge my bets with Cam Ward, right? Like,
well, either way, let's just leave it at this. We're not taking him over Cam Rising, DTR, or Caleb Williams. Is that fair enough?
Yep.
So he's at best the fourth best quarterback in the conference.
There you go. And I think it's gonna take some stuff going right for him to get there. Yep.
Yeah. All right, let's move on. Let's move on to our buying and selling, and we'll stick with the quarterback theme. So I'll kick this off with the thing that I am selling. I am selling Stanford and Tanner McKee. So, you know, this is another guy kind of similar to Will Levis, where if you look at any of the draft stuff, Tanner McKee is high on those lists. Pro Football Focus had him as their number three 2023 draft eligible quarterback from a draft perspective. And I get it. Like, if you look at him, he's that prototypical NFL quarterback, at least as of 10 years ago. He's huge. He's 6'6". And he looks like what an NFL quarterback did, again, at least 10 years ago, or the way Josh Allen does today. I don't love him, Brian. I really don't. Like, if you look at his numbers last year, he was number 49 in QBR behind Rocky Lombardi, Sean Clifford, and the aforementioned Emory Jones. That's not great. He was sacked on nearly 8% of dropbacks, so 93rd in college football. Again, not good. And we do know now, right? Like, I know somebody's going to reach out to me and be like, well, like, isn't that on the offensive line? I mean, we know now that sacks are largely on quarterbacks, at least more than we ever thought they were. Like, that is something more controllable from a quarterback. So I don't like that. And you know, we've talked about it earlier. I like quarterbacks who can run a little bit, especially in college football. And I think that's the way the game is moving. Like, I don't think we're going to see too many. I mean, even Josh Allen is huge, but he can move. Like, we're not going to see I don't think we're seeing many more Peyton Mannings come out. And so for all those reasons, I don't love Tanner McKee. Like, I don't like these statuesque quarterbacks. So I'm pretty down on Tanner McKee. Don't get me wrong. Like, when you watch him, he has arm talent. He makes some tight throws. He seems to have a pretty big arm. But even the way, like, their West Coast offense, it's a boring offense. He doesn't get the ball, like, down the field a whole lot. So I'm just pretty down on Stanford. I'm as down on Stanford as I am on Tanner McKee. And I don't think they're going to be very good this year, just like they weren't last year. On defense, they were one of just 10 teams in the country with a sack percentage under 4%. So they were one of the 10 worst teams at actually getting home to the quarterback last year. And I don't see really what's going to change this year. Stanford doesn't really take transfers. They took one transfer. At that position, you know, in the front seven, like, true freshmen don't help you a whole lot. So I just don't know really what's going to change. Why should I expect this team to be significantly better this year?
I think that's a totally fair point. I think that's a great point. I know you mentioned the quarterback theme for selling. I'm continuing it with Bo Nix at Oregon. I think, like, it just feels like a really, really weird fit to me. It doesn't add up. Like, when I saw the news come out and it happened very quickly, you just kind of, like, make a face, right? It's like, wait, Oregon? Like, Oregon's supposed to have some flashy quarterback. And Bo Nix is, in my opinion, never really lived up to what he was supposed to be, right? He cut the interceptions out a decent amount last year. Right, he only threw three last season, but he's never, like, taken over the games, and maybe that's not what they plan to ask of him. But, like, I feel like I was reading that it just was a great marriage and made so much sense. And just looking at his game log from last year, right, like, when he played good defenses at Penn State, they lost. He only threw for 185 yards, didn't throw for a touchdown. The next week, they only beat Georgia State by 10. He threw for 156 yards, didn't throw a touchdown. Like, he's not going out and winning games. He did throw for 200 yards against Georgia. Of course, that's a legendary defense, and they did pick him off, but didn't throw for a touchdown. Texas A&M, another great defense, 153 yards, pick, no touchdowns. It seems like just on these games where you need your quarterback to make some plays against good defenses for you to win, he has a history of not doing it. And so I just, the fit is weird to me. And also just, like, I'm not ready to all of a sudden anoint him. Oh, you know, maybe it'll come together. I have never seen anything that would indicate that's going to happen just with a change of scenery. And so I'm selling my Bo Nix stock, which, for the record, I was the proud owner of when he first got the starting job at Auburn, and quickly punted on that.
Okay, so wait, I was going to ask you this because I had a memory. I thought you were very anti-Bo Nix and into Oregon in that game. Because I remember we were watching week one of that college football season together, and I remember, I have this distinct memory of you being very devastated when Bo Nix threw that touchdown pass.
I was, and that's when I purchased my stock. I was guy's going to be a star. I was like, listen, he kicked my ass. I'm happy to admit it. Like, Oregon, I was like, I had chalked that up to a W, and he drove it down and shut me right up. And I was like, this guy's a big game player. I'm, like, fairly certain that was the last big play that Bo Nix made in a big game. So I think it's been a minute, and I'm not. And so I don't see it. I don't see it.
Okay, I'm going to steal a Bill Simmons thing for a second, because there was a game, that Penn State game you mentioned last year. I think that was a Fox Big Noon Saturday. Nah, I don't know what it was. It was a big telecast, right? It was either, like, a Fox Big Noon Saturday or an ESPN, like, big time, maybe, like, an ABC. That's what it was, I think. I think it was an ABC Saturday night. And at one point, they were like, Clifford, Nix, next. And it's like, really?
The inventory of games was a little low that week, I would imagine.
And I remember that was like a Bill Simmons thing from way back in the day, like his early Sports Guy Page 2 days, where he'd like make fun of those intros. But it is right, like, that doesn't excite me at all. The name Bo Nix does not excite me at all when I hear it. Like, that's not going to make me turn on the TV. And that doesn't inspire much confidence that if I'm rooting, or better yet, betting on that team, that I'm going to feel pretty confident.
Yeah, and like, they might put up points, but that's what I mean by a weird fit. That's a good way to put it, because, like, I feel like over the years, you get excited to turn on the Oregon offense and, like, watch these big plays and flashy, fast guys. And, like, Bo Nix is quarterback in that team?
But I think, Brian, I will say, I think that Mario Cristobal was the transition out of that. Like, they are now... they're like an SEC program. They want to be big. Like, that was Cristobal always big up front. That was his whole thing. Now, I mean, and with Joe Moorhead, I think Joe Moorhead's a great OC, and I think he's an exciting guy. But now, again, where do they go to again? SEC defensive coordinator, Dan Lanning, right? They bring in... so I think this is the whole reason why Nix is there, is that Kenny Dillingham is the OC, and he was the OC and quarterback coach in 2019 at Auburn, which was Nix's freshman year. So, like, I think that's why this is all coming together. But I think you are seeing, like, I think in our minds, we will always think of Oregon as the Chip Kelly, up-tempo, go for two early in the game. It's always going to be 8-0 on that first touchdown. And that's just not what they are anymore. And I don't think they're going to be that way for the foreseeable future. Like, I can't imagine that Dan Lanning is going to have any other approach than to try to recreate an SEC defense. So I think we're seeing a shift from Oregon.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's a fair point. I think it's a really fair point. I'm trying to put... Bo Nix throwing screen passes to all those great fast running backs they had back in the day, and that's not what it is anymore. That's a great call.
All right, so let's get positive here, Brian. What are you buying?
So I'm gonna keep it tight and toss it back to you, because we actually have similar buys. So I was buying Oregon State. I was buying specifically a name to remember, I think, really for this season and in an upcoming NFL draft, is Rajon Wright. He's a defensive back, preseason second team. Some of our listeners might know him from Last Chance U fame, where he transferred from the JUCO to Oregon State to play with his brother, who was there. So shout out to him, because he's the prototypical. He's like 6'2 corner. He's great. But I think Oregon State as a whole was pesky. I think, you know, there's like a realistic chance that even after last season, they're better in all three phases. And so I'm buying Oregon State, kind of their overall trajectory. I like where they're going as a program. They tripped some teams up last year. And I know you have one player in particular you want to call out, but I think just in general, that's a program that is kind of laying the groundwork, in my opinion, for sure.
I think Jonathan Smith is doing more with less. I think he's doing a really good job there and making them relevant and interesting, and a lot more interesting than they had been in years past. The player that I am buying is also a beeve, and I want to call him out. It's linebacker / offensive playmaker Jack Coletto. So Coletto is a 6'3 former quarterback. He played quarterback at Oregon State, but he's really, really more used in the running game now. They kind of line him up as like a wildcat quarterback at times. And last year against USC, he had 2 rushing touchdowns and he picked off a pass. And I love that, Brian. That's what's awesome about college football. You're never going to see that in the NFL. And I think we need to celebrate that. Like, this is a guy who is playing both sides of the ball. And I just think that's a ton of fun. And like, that's what makes college football fun. And let's celebrate it.
I love it. I love it. I would love to have a conversation with that guy. People who play exclusively offense know exactly when they're going on the field. People who play exclusively defense know exactly when they're going on the field. He's just like, tell me when to come off or else I'm making an impact on every single snap of the game. It's amazing.
And apparently he's going to get more involved on the defensive side this year, too. He only had 8 tackles last year. But from what I've been hearing, what I've been reading, he's going to get more involved. But like, I don't want you to think that it was just like one good game. The guy had 8 rushing touchdowns last year. He averaged 5.3 yards per carry. So like, he is a threat. And I just think it's something we got to celebrate. We got to celebrate the positive stuff.
Yeah. And shout out to Oregon State, too, for like doubling down, if you will, this season. I love that you're hearing that they're going to continue on it, because it's like you find something that works. And if he's game, it sounds like he's having a blast doing it. Why not keep it going? I love it.
So as we transition into our bets, one of the things I want to talk about was Oregon State. So let's just keep talking Beavs here. So their offense was great last year. I expect it to be really good again this year, and it's a lot of fun. However, their defense was not very good, and they fired their defensive coordinator midseason, promoted their linebackers coach kind of with let's say they had three regular season games to go and the bowl game, and you're going to hear a lot, everybody out there, you're going to hear a lot about how, you know, when he took over, they held Stanford to 14 points, they held Arizona State to 10 points, and he really changed the defense. And a lot of the talk this offseason is about how they want to be more aggressive. However, I think that they are going to be just as bad defensively, and they're going to risk giving up even more big plays, because a more aggressive defense plus a lack of talent, which is something that Oregon State, they're just not a talented team, right? They're typically at the bottom of the Pac-12 recruiting rankings, around like 50th or so in the nation. They're like a BC level recruiting program. So I think they are going to give up a lot of points, because what people aren't talking about at the end of that last season is against Oregon. Oregon scored, they had four drives in the first half of that game. They scored three touchdowns and a field goal, and they were up 24-3 at halftime. And, you know, they kind of slowed down in the second half, but the game was over at halftime because they were able to score at will. And in that game, in the first half, they had Oregon gain 10 yards or more on nearly 30% of their plays, including a 50-yard touchdown pass. And then in the bowl game, they lost to Utah State, held them to 24 points, but gave up a 62-yard touchdown pass. And I think we're going to see more of that from Oregon State this year. If they truly are going to be a more aggressive defense with the talent that they have, they're going to give up some big plays. And I like their offense. So I think early in the season, there might be some opportunities for Oregon State overs. So that's kind of my first thing that I'm really liking from a betting perspective. Let's go back and forth on this one. What do you like from a betting perspective?
Yeah, I like... So this will actually segue really well, I think, into one of yours. I've tended to try to find some long futures, like Heisman futures, and Cam Rising's 80-1 to win the Heisman. And to me, if Utah's entering the season as a favorite and as a realistic college football playoff contender, which I think that they are, and particularly will be if Cam Rising's playing at a Heisman level, to me, that might be my favorite of all the Heisman sprinkles I've said. I know I said Will Shipley at the ACC, and I was grasping at straws there, and I forget who I had in the Big 12, but I felt a little bit better about that one. But for me, Cam Rising, right, if Utah's going to get where it's going to go, that's the guy. And so if you can get the guy on a team that has a realistic hope at it at 80-1, I think he's got a real chance to be a finalist in New York, and I'm jumping all over that.
I like it, Brian. I think it's good because I love Utah this year. And Cam Rising was the best quarterback in the conference from a QBR perspective last year. Utah, as an offense, really stepped things up after he took over. From a run game perspective, they were second in the country, only behind Coastal Carolina in yards per carry, and they returned their starting tailback, who is, I think he's first or second team preseason All Pac-12. Let's see here. Let's make sure we get it right. Yeah, he's first team. It's him and Zach Charbonnet. Tavion Thomas, first team All Pac-12. And so I think their offense is going to be a real threat this year. They do lose some players on the defensive side of the ball, but if there's one thing we can trust about Kyle Whittingham and Utah, is they're going to get it figured out defensively. So I am all in on Utah this year. You know, USC, the best thing I think that could ever happen to Utah from a betting perspective is everything that USC did this offseason. So I got three Utah bets that I'm liking. Plus 200 to win 10 games, plus 300 to win the conference, and then plus 500 to make the college football playoff.
Wow. Does an opener at Florida scare you?
A little bit, but I think that they are. I was disappointed to see they're like kind of between a 1 and 2 point favorite, depending on where you look. I was hoping it would be like even, or maybe they would be just like a little bit of a, you know, home SEC type deal, they'd be a dog.
Sure.
But I think, like, realistically, if they're going to be a contender for the college football playoff, it's a game you have to win. Florida in their under first year head coach, not expected to do a whole lot. Like, you have to beat a mid tier SEC team if you think you can be a college football playoff contender.
And if they do, it's one of those things where you're like, oh, they're better for it, right? If they come out and show out, you're like, oh, okay. You know, you talk about Oregon being darling after an early season win last year. Like, even though Florida is a middle of the pack team, if you go there to the swamp and win, people are going to be talking about you right away and you're going to be feeling good. So I'm with you on that one. I love those bets. The last one I have for you today, bit of a spoiler earlier. I like UCLA at 10-1 to win the conference. I think there's value there. You talked about it. You got into all the reasons why. I love the experience too. I like DTR. I think they're rolling. Charbonnet looked really sharp at various points throughout last year. So I think that's where the value comes if you're looking for a bit of a longer shot. Obviously, I like all the Utah bets and I'm on the record for that. But if you're looking for a little bit of value, I think UCLA's got a real, real shot to play in the conference championship game. So if you can get that at 10-1 before the season, I think you got to do it. So that's my other best bet.
All right, I got one more for you. And it's Arizona under 2.5 wins at plus 140. So look, anytime you're getting plus 140, it's a little bit of a gamble, but that's what we're here to do. We're here to gamble. And I like that under 2.5 wins. And a lot of this is a schedule bet. So I don't know what Arizona was doing from a scheduling perspective, because they just have a wild schedule to start the year. So they go at San Diego State week one, already mentioned, opening a brand new stadium at San Diego State. Mississippi State at home week two, and then they have North Dakota State coming into town week three. And to me, that looks like a recipe for 0-3, because I mean, how often North Dakota State doesn't even barely get the chance anymore to play FBS teams because they beat them too often. And like, if I had to guess, I wouldn't be shocked if they're favored in that game. I wouldn't be shocked if North Dakota State's favored, or it's going to be within a touchdown. Like, if they're not, it's going to be within a touchdown, and I'm going to be all over
jump
North
Dakota
on those.
State. Yeah, all jump over on North those points.
Dakota State points and money line. So I am liking for Arizona under 2.5 wins. I'm liking North Dakota State when they come to town on the money line and the points, if they're getting points. And then we'll have to see what that actually is when the time comes. But I just don't think Arizona is going to be much better this year. And I like the juice, the plus 140, I like the juiced odds. And, you know, like, Phil Steele is really big on, well, they had a bad turnover margin, and like, that automatically means they're going to be better. Well, sometimes you're a bad team and bad teams turn the ball over. And I think their quarterback situation will certainly be better this year with Deloria coming over from Washington State. But they still just don't have a lot of talent there. And I think like that schedule early, if they go 0-3 early, it could be really demoralizing for them. And then they also have a stretch later of the season where they go Oregon at home, at Washington, USC at home, at Utah, at UCLA. So realistically, I see like there's a couple spots that they have to, that North Dakota State game is so big for them from that over-under perspective. So if they go 0-3 to start that season in the non-con, I don't see any way they get three wins. I just don't see it on the schedule.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great call. I was stunned to see North Dakota State. Like, I feel like most of the FBS learned their lesson, and it seems like Jed Fish, you know, he thinks he's bigger than that, and I think it was a mistake. So I love that bet for you. Great job.
All right, man. Well, that's it. That's the West Coast. Got anything else before we get out of here?
No, that's all I got. I California, here we come. Let's play some Pac-12 football.
All right. Well, that's our show. We'll be back next week to talk some Big Ten football. And until next time, keep the grill hot and the cooler cold.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.